Chapter 6. Estella's Return. I decided to visit Miss Havisham the next day. There were two convicts on the coach with me being taken to the prison ships. With horror, I recognized one of them as the stranger who had given me money at the village bar. Fortunately, he did not recognize me. Weirdly, though, I overheard the convict telling the other the story of our meeting.
Magwitch gave me £2 for the boy, saying he'd given him food and kept his secret.
Is he still on the ships?
No, he tried to escape again and got sent away for life.
I had tried to forget that event in my life, but it seemed it would always follow me. I was shaky when I got off the coach, but as I headed to Miss Havisham's, my imagination took over with thoughts of being Estella's hero. When I arrived, I was surprised to see Orlick open the gate. He was as rude as ever. I immediately decided to talk to Jaggers and get him dismissed. Inside the house, I found Miss Havisham sitting with a young, sophisticated woman who turned and looked proudly at me. I saw that it was Estella. She had grown so much more beautiful and womanly. I felt like a common boy again, with so much distance between us.
"Has she changed much, Pip?" asked Miss Havisham.
I was so stunned I could not reply.
"Has he changed?"
she then asked Estella.
"Very much," said Estella.
"Less common," said Miss Havisham, laughing.
Estella laughed too, looking at me as if I were still a boy. As we sat and talked, her proud presence reminded me that, because of her, I had become ashamed of home and Joe and ached to be a gentleman of expectations, but still I loved her, and I knew I always would. Estella and I walked through the garden afterward. I learned she had returned from France and would be coming to London. When I talked about the first time we met, she said,
"I don't remember."
"You don't remember making me cry?" I asked.
"No, I don't," she said. And this made me cry again deep inside. "You must know I have no heart," she said.
"I don't believe that."
"Listen, Miss Havisham wants us to spend time together, and I want to warn you, don't be silly and don't expect anything from me."
She looked closely at me, and her face reminded me of someone, though I could not think who. Inside, Miss Havisham spoke to me alone.
"Do you think she's beautiful, Pip?"
"Everybody must."
Then she drew me close and said,
"Love her, Pip. If she's kind to you, love her. If she hurts you, love her. If she tears your heart to pieces, love her."
She spoke so violently that it sounded like a curse.
"I'll tell you," she continued, "what real love is. It is blind devotion, absolute self-humiliation, utter submission, trust, and belief against yourself and the whole world, giving your heart and soul to the person who crushes it, as I did."
Miss Havisham's words haunted me all the way back to London. I confessed my love to Herbert that night, telling him what Estella had said.
"I've always known you loved her," he said.
"But do you really think you could be happy with her? Can't you try to move on?"
"It's impossible. I'll always love her."
Accepting my answer, Herbert then confessed he was in love too, with a woman named Clara, whom he would marry once he had money. I told him how happy I was for him. One day soon after that, Estella wrote to say she was coming to London the next day, and that Miss Havisham wanted me to meet her. When I met her at the station, she was more beautiful and prouder than ever. But I noticed that she talked to me as a friend now. I took her to the house where she would live, and as we said goodbye, her face again reminded me of someone, but I still could not think who. As time went on, I thought of Estella constantly, but at the same time, I could not help remembering how awfully I had treated dear Joe. Thinking also of how my lifestyle was having an effect on Herbert, I resolved to change my habits. Around this time, my sister suddenly died. I went home for the funeral, which was simple, and attended by only our closest friends.
Joe was happy when I said I would spend the night, and I was pleased with myself for suggesting it. Before dinner, Biddy and I went for a walk. "I suppose you can't live here now, Biddy dear?" I asked. "No, but I'll still look after Joe."
"But how are you going to live, Biddy? If you want any mo—"
"I don't need any money," she said, her face flushed. Then recovering herself, she added, "I'm going to teach at the new school."
Then she told me about my sister's death. "One night I was with your sister when she said, 'Joe,' and I ran and got him. She hugged him and said, 'Pardon.' Then she said, 'Pip,' and she died soon after that."
"Nothing was ever discovered?"
"Nothing."
"Any news of Orlick?"
"I heard he's working at the quarry. You know, he watches me sometimes from behind that tree."
I was shocked to hear this, and I promised to visit more often.
"Are you sure that you'll come more often?" she asked.
"Biddy, how can you say that?"
I was extremely hurt by her words, and we did not talk much after that, even at dinner. The next morning I said, "I'll be back soon, and often, Joe."
"You're always welcome, Pip."
Biddy apologized to me, but as I walked away, I knew in my heart she was right.
I turned 21 shortly after, and Jaggers called me to his office to tell me I would now receive £500 every month. He did not tell me who my benefactor was, though. Hearing about my allowance, I thought of a way I could finally do something good, and I stopped to ask Wemmick for advice.
"I want to use my money to help a friend. I hope to help him make a new beginning," I said.
"Well, you might as well just throw your money off London Bridge," he said.
"That's really discouraging."
"Well, that," he replied, "is my professional opinion in this office."
"Ah, then may I visit you at Walworth?"
"You're most welcome, in a personal capacity," he said.
That Sunday, I found Wemmick his usual friendly Walworth self. We had tea with the aged and with a lady named Miss Skiffins, who, I discovered, was a frequent visitor. Then I explained to Wemmick how much Herbert had helped me. I asked how I could best help Herbert get a secure job and gradually buy him a small partnership, all without Herbert ever knowing.
"Well, Mr. Pip, this is mighty good of you."
"Then please help me to be good."
Within a couple of weeks, Wemmick had helped me sign a contract to invest in a shipping company called Clarikers, which agreed to offer Herbert a job and eventually a partnership. Feeling good, I now returned my attention to Estella. I visited her often and accompanied her everywhere. Still, I was miserable, for she used me to tease other men, and it almost drove both them and me mad. At one party, I realized that Drummle was one of the many men following her about, and that she encouraged him. When I confronted her, she replied,
"Pip, will you never take my warning? How I behave may affect others, but it's not meant to affect you."
"But I can't bear what people might say."
"I can."
"Oh, don't be so proud, Estella."
"Do you want me then," she turned with a fixed and serious look, "to deceive you? You're the only man I don't do that to. Now let's not talk about this anymore."
With no choice but to let it go, I stopped arguing. I had no idea that my life was about to change forever.